joining Children of the Watch.
That's right. It's the number one after show for all things Star Wars television. I am your host, Alex Maxwell, and joining me, as always, is...
Mac Lacey. Alex, we did it. We're across the finish line. Obi-Wan Kenobi has debuted. It has aired in its entirety now. We've seen how the story ends, and now we get to talk about it.
And if you can't tell by the tone of my voice, I'm hyped right now because that was one incredible episode of Obi-Wan Kenobi. And honestly, it brought me things that I never thought we would see ever in Star Wars that I've been wondering about, I've been thinking about, and we got it in this finale. And I can't wait to do this scene-by-scene breakdown with you. But before we do, let's just talk off, like right off the top. How do you feel about this episode and this finale for Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Yeah, I think overall it was a really solid finale. I thought it did everything it needed to do. I don't think we left any narrative threads loose or anything like that. I think we tied everything up. I think the thing I've been thinking about the most today is just how much context this story gives us for additional stories. So in A New Hope now, when I watch these characters, Obi-Wan and Darth Vader, I can't wait to see how my perspective has changed, just knowing having a more complete history of their relationship. I think, to me, that's been the biggest takeaway from the finale, and then the show in its entirety is just... how, after all these years of you and I talking about it, and, you know, me from practically birth, you know, watching the movies and everything, there's still a fresh perspective there to be found. And that's just so cool to me.
That is really cool. And that is one of the big added benefits of doing this show in particular is, like you said, it gives you a fresh twist on, for me, especially A New Hope. You know, because that's the movie that we really are introduced to all these characters and stuff. And this episode in particular really reminded me why I love these characters so much.
Yeah.
You know, like why I love Obi-Wan, why I love Princess Leia, why I love Darth Vader, and I feel so heartbroken about him. Like, I love Star Wars so much, and this episode reminded me why I do.
Yeah.
And that's a really, really cool thing. And as a whole, as a series as a whole, I think this was something, and we've been talking about this for a few weeks now, it was something that was super special because it wasn't just like a episode of the week type thing like you kind of get with The Mandalorian or The Book of Boba Fett. This really did feel like one movie that was cut up.
Yeah.
But it was also, the reason it was special was because it felt like it impacted the Skywalker narrative in such a huge way, right?
Yeah. I mean, you're dealing with these characters that are myth at this point.
Yeah.
Like I think Obi-Wan and Darth Vader and Princess Leia, I think it's safe to say they're just like part of the Western mythology.
At this point.
And so when just dealing with characters that iconic and that, special, like the whole thing just felt larger than life. And it really does kind of feel like a 0.5. Like episode 3.5, you know?
Yeah.
It's right in between. It fleshes out the transition. It's, not only just sort of course correcting some things that weren't laid out at the beginning, to make everything more cohesive, but it's adding and building and, it didn't feel like just like an attempt to, retroactively make anything work or anything like that. I've got a lot of thoughts.
you nailed it. And like, that's the thing is like, I can't wait to sit down and just watch the series as a whole instead of just like week by week. Like there's going to be a huge added benefit to sitting down and binging this one instead of waiting. And I think that will even help like the viewing of some people maybe who didn't vibe with it, if they could just sit down and watch it as a whole one thing. Maybe might feel a little bit different about it. And so I'm excited to do that as well.
Yeah.
I'm
very excited for that chance too. There's a couple things, you know, now that I've got I know what the full series is, you know, there's some stuff I wish I had more of, or wish the focus had shifted differently in a few different areas, you know, but I have those thoughts, you know, but I'm interested to see if they shift at all when I do eventually binge the whole thing straight through. I definitely like Star Wars TV coming out week to week. I think just it's a better TV viewing experience. We get to sit with the episodes, talk about it in between more, that kind of thing. But there is something to be said about just seeing the story straight through, getting a clearer kind of idea of where everything's moving narratively.
And it kind of feels like this show was set up to do that too, you know, just one sitting, maybe an airplane ride or something, watch all of Obi-Wan Kenobi. That'd be sweet. Yeah. Okay. Let's jump into the business and then we'll get to our scene by scene breakdown. If you're a brand new listener, maybe you just now found us because you want to hear about Obi-Wan Kenobi and the finale. We are Children of the Watch, a Star Wars after show. We were formerly The Mandalorian Watch, where we covered every single episode of The Mandalorian, but when they announced all the TV shows, we transitioned our name to honor who we were, but also kind of go forward into the future to cover all live-action Star Wars television shows. And so we'll be here to do the same exact thing for Andor in 70 days when that premieres August 31st.
Just around the corner, it feels
It really is. So we'll be on that train as well. And honestly, I think our logo for Andor is probably my favorite one.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
It's between that one and the Mandalorian one, but... I'm super excited about that show. So make sure you're subscribed if you're listening on the podcast or on YouTube so you don't miss our coverage as we begin gearing up for Andor as we get closer to that. But if you enjoy this show and you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch. And just for $2 a month, you can get access to bonus content and episodes, as well as our Discord, which has been so much fun this season. And you can also support us by going to keepthewatch.com and buying a Hello There t-shirt. We're really proud of that one. So you can go there as well. But if you can't help us out financially, we understand these are tough times. You can go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening on your podcast app and give us a sweet 5-star review, and that would be so helpful because it goes such a long way. And you know, tell your friends about us because we want everyone in on the fun.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Is that wrapping it up?
I think so.
Can we get to the breakdown now?
Let's do it. So the director of this episode is Deborah Chow. Who could have guessed?
What a twist! Yeah. It's like she did the whole thing or something.
She did.
Wow.
And the writers are Joby Harold and Andrew Stanton. Those are the two main writers for this one who also wrote the last episode. And if you're not familiar you did not hear our last breakdown, Andrew Stanton is very well known in the Pixar world. He did WALL-E and Finding Nemo, but he also did John Carter of Mars. Yep. And then also Haseen Amani is also credited for this. I think he did more of the initial stuff for Obi-Wan Kenobi before they kind of move things in a different direction. But I think he still gets credit for, you know, outlining everything and stuff.
Yeah.
So really, really cool. All right, let's do this. We start off on Tatooine, and I believe this is Anchorhead. Mac, we had this question going into the first breakdown, whether or not we were seeing Mos Eisley or Anchorhead. And I think podcaster Still Saunders confirmed this was Anchorhead because he actually got to be an extra in a lot of these scenes as Ajax Citizen. So,
yeah. This is the third attempt at making this joke that I've made today. We've had a little bit of some turbulence issues in our recording schedule today. But how good of him to find it within himself to just make that sacrifice, take one for the team, be in Star Wars so that we could indeed confirm that this is Anchorhead.
Yes. Thank you for your service, Steele. seriously, though, it's really cool to see Anchorhead on screen because, you know, we've only really heard about it. It's also in the KOTOR games. We got our KOTOR reference in right there. So.
Got a sweet swoop bike racing scene
they
on
do.
Anchorhead.
Really sweet. So a line is forming at a water station. People are waiting on just a cup of water when suddenly the foreman from the very first episode shoves an unsuspecting man out of the way to steal his water. And he asks the water vendor if he has something he wants to say. And then we hear Reva's voice as she responds, "I have something to say." That's never good when you hear that.
Anytime anybody gives one of those really tropey lead-in lines, like, you gotta see this. Like, no, you really just gotta see this. Like, just tell them what it is. They'll come that way. if you're like, hey, there's this wild monster creature that's escaped in this room. You want to come
see
it? I'm like, I'll go see that. But if you're just like, you better come see it. I'm like, I'm kind of busy, you know?
Yeah. It also gives me anxiety of like, I don't know what you're setting me up for. Just tell me.
Yeah, just rip the Band-Aid off.
Yeah. yes. So Reva's ripping that Band-Aid off. And the foreman then tells her to wait her turn when Reva smacks the water out of his hands with the force. And there's this leathery bandage around her stomach. And she announces that she's looking for a farmer named Owen. Now, remember, they had that confrontation in the very first episode. So she does remember who he is, but she's looking for where he lives.
Yeah.
And then we cut to space as the Devastator, and that is the name of Darth Vader's Imperial Star Destroyer, pursues the Path's lone transport. And this is the same Star Destroyer that we see in A New Hope, and it's very reminiscent of that opening sequence of A New Hope, the way that it's being pursued.
Yeah, this ship's doing a little bit better job of doing serpentine.
Than the
Tantive IV was.
Yeah, they're actually dipping and diving a little bit, trying to get away and not
putting
get shot.
Putting forth a little effort, not trying to die.
Yeah, the Tantive IV is just taking it every time in A New Hope.
Just a beeline. Just direct just... course.
On the bridge, Vader watches and demands they increase their firepower. And the music is actually very similar to the asteroid pursuit music in Empire Strikes Back. And I think Natalie Holt did a phenomenal job of bringing in some of those familiar cues that we have from the classic Star Wars movies in this episode.
Yeah, for sure. It's a more active score, like in interacting with the story and everything, than we've seen in the past episodes, I think. So it just kind of added that extra oomph to this episode, I feel like.
It really did. And on the ship shudders as it takes more hits, and Roken announces that they're heading to Tessen. But things aren't looking good at all, and Obi-Wan gets up to talk with him alone. And then Roken goes on to explain that the motivator is shot. And Obi-Wan asks how much time they're going to need as explosion causes the lights to flicker a little bit. And then Obi-Wan observes the hopelessness of the situation and then sees Leia entertaining Corran and his mother with Lola. Now, this is really cool. Corran is that same kid that Haja helped in episode 2 of Obi-Wan Kenobi. But we also suspect this might be a reference to Corran Horn of the old expanded universe, who ends up becoming a Jedi in the old canon. So I really hope that is that Corran. That would be cool.
It'll be interesting to see if they're... If he ends up popping up in a story prominently later down the line, it'll be cool to look back and see how he was planted here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and he's having such, like, he's having a lot of interactions with Princess Leia, you know?
Right.
He's have, you know, like, one of his best friends in the EU is her brother, Luke.
Yeah.
And so that's a really cool thing. And I just really love this scene, how Leia is taking the initiative to comfort other people while they're worried. You know, she's 10, you know, she's just intuitively doing that already. And I love that about her character. And I love, honestly, this has been one of the greatest things about the series is introducing Leia into it and getting a snippet of what her childhood is like has been so wonderful.
Yeah. And we'll say it one more time. Vivian Lyra Blair.
Amazing.
So good. Perfect casting. Amazing performance.
Adorable.
both the character Princess Leia and also like Carrie Fisher.
Yes.
Just directly, you know?
Yeah.
So well done. Can't wait to see how her career goes.
You got to imagine too, if Carrie were alive, she would absolutely love everything that she's doing.
Absolutely. I mean, just that, the fire, the wit, you know, that she's got in the show. She was written really well.
Yes, she was.
Just well done on the part of young Leia, just all around for the show.
Golf clap for all around.
Yeah.
When Leia notices Obi-Wan is looking at her, she approaches Obi-Wan and says they're scared, and then holds Lola in her palms. She keeps their minds off of it. And then Obi-Wan replies with a small smile, maybe I should borrow her too. And then we cut to Tatooine as Owen and Luke enter a store, and the store owner asks what they need, and Luke confidently says they need a new belt for the speeder. Luke seems like a great kid, everyone knows Luke. He's a good kid.
Yeah. Just doing his best, you know?
Yeah, like he really is like Padme a lot more. Like,
I think that's one of the more interesting things they've done with the Skywalker twins for this series. I think you do see more of Luke is just like a all around good kid trying to help out and like find the ways in which he can, you know, be active and everything like that. But ultimately more reserved than Leia, you know?
Oh, for sure. And I mean, we got to give credit to Owen and Beru here, especially Beru.
Beru
might be the most influential person on Luke Skywalker after watching this episode.
For sure. She's awesome.
She is.
I'm like, thank goodness Beru was there. Cause
yeah.
I'm like, I don't know that Owen would have gotten the job done.
Can you imagine, just real quick, how many stormtroopers Owen and Beru probably killed before they finally got in A New Hope?
Additional context for watching the movie. I love that.
They probably took out a whole squadron full of stormtroopers before those flame troopers got in there.
Just think about how much more they would have put into preparing their defenses and their go plan, you know?
Yeah.
Because this is what they were able to do without this happening before.
Right.
So after this, I imagine they're like, all right, we're going to do this and this and this differently. You know?
Yeah.
Booby trapping the yard. And
oh, you don't want to mess with Beru. No. Not at all.
No, she's coming for you.
She is. So back to the breakdown. Owen explains that Luke broke the last one, and that being the belt for the speeder. And Luke smiles and goes to find a new one. And as he's looking, the water vendor from before enters and says that Owen needs to know something. And then we cut back to the freight transport, and Leia is not happy that Obi-Wan is trying to leave. And the others over here, and they also don't like this idea. Pretty much the whole crew and cabin are like, no, don't do this, Obi-Wan.
And that's what you want.
Yeah,
you
know? I mean, it makes you feel good, right?
Yeah. but they're all inside like, oh, thank goodness.
Please don't go.
Please don't save all of our lives. don't help us evade almost certain doom.
Oh, please, Obi-Wan. Oh, man. Corrin's mother says, wait, what happened to all of us staying together? And then Obi-Wan goes on to say, Roken needs more time to fix the ship. This will give him that time. You've spent 10 years protecting the Jedi. This is my chance to return that favor. And that's really cool, you know, that Obi-Wan is fully accepting his role as a Jedi again. And like, I know this is what a Jedi should be doing.
Yeah.
Is protecting everyone. And I love that.
Yeah. Stepping back into his role.
Yeah, absolutely. And they continue to argue with him, not wanting him to go. But Obi-Wan continues, you are all the future. And then he points to Leia. You're the future. You're what needs to survive. Leia's angry and she storms off. And Obi-Wan goes to follow. But Haja intercepts, saying that she needs to be given space, like he knows her really well, but he doesn't. And then Obi-Wan makes Haja promise to get her home. And for the first time, maybe in the series, Haja looks serious and accepts the challenge. and he gives his word to do so. And then he says, although the word of a liar and a fake Jedi might not mean much to you. And Obi-Wan says, it's good enough for me, because he's also a liar.
Just two fibbers. Just two liars. Falsity sayers. Just two truth stretchers.
Is there one more that you can fit in there?
Just two long yarn spinners. Just two tall tale tellers.
There we go.
Just
oh wow.
Just you know,
this is reminding me of our bonus Patreon episode where we went on idiom wars.
Yeah. We got a solid like 3 minutes of idioms probably. So maybe we should not promote the Patreon this way. I think we're probably scaring more people away than we're attracting.
Good point. So once he knows Leia is going to be okay, he turns to leave, and we cut back to Dolores' homestead as Owen hurriedly approaches Beru, ordering Luke inside the house, and then Owen takes Beru inside when she can tell something is wrong, and Owen explains the situation and then mentions that Ben is gone, and Beru asks, whose fault is that? And I love this whole exchange, Mac, and you know, for those of us who are married, I have been rightly corrected so many times by my wife of like, oh yeah, that's my fault.
Yeah, I'm highly correctable. So
yes.
Yeah.
So I love that. I love that whole exchange. And like we talked about before, like we never really talk about how much of an influence Owen and Beru were on Luke Skywalker, and it really shows from this scene.
Yeah, like nature and nurture. I think at this point we're all kind of aware that both of those are big factors in kind of who a person eventually becomes, you know. But I'm glad that we got to see the Larses, you know, take a more active role in Luke's development. In, you know, they're saving the galaxy by raising Luke this way.
Yeah.
You know, and just Beru having agency in anything is great, because she was just kind of there in A New Hope, you know?
Right.
So
it's really cool to see. So in the lead up to Obi-Wan Kenobi, we had like five things we wanted to see.
Yep.
And as true to the whole series, this series like gave us a twist on one of the things, like Owen being really, really cool. Well, how about Beru being really, really cool? And that's something I didn't realize I wanted to see. And I'm so glad that they brought that to us.
Yeah.
Because this was really, really cool. I loved every second of it.
Yeah. No, for sure. Just like how down they were. Like they were just ready to go, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Especially Beru. Like Owen wants to go hide somewhere, but Beru sees that's not going to work. There's nowhere to hide. She doesn't want to endanger anyone else, and that's a very like Luke Skywalker thing to say.
It is.
Yeah. So she's like, no, we're going to do this right here. She even says, we're enough, you and me.
Yeah.
That's good stuff right there.
I mean, they got to be, you know?
Yeah, man. Beru, love you. Then Beru crouches to cut out in the wall and pulls out two shotgun style blasters and tosses one to Owen. I really like the shotgun blasters. Those are cool.
I mean, they look like
they're just shotguns.
The kind of home defense weapon where like growing up in the South, you know, like people have those kind of things. And like, you know, you go to your grandparents' house and they've just got like the oldest gun that the corner. You know?
When my grandfather died, like I got his very, very old shotgun. Now, of course, I don't have anything like with it. It's just that's something that he wanted me to have, and so it's like that's it looks exactly like that. It is a very old looking blaster, and I think that's cool. It gives it, you know,
yeah. They've just got like the first blasters.
From the KOTOR.
The first two that were ever made, they're there.
Right there. So, back on the transport, Haja comforts Leia and turns to see Obi-Wan, and he tells Obi-Wan that he's talked to her and he's welcome. And then Obi-Wan then bends down to speak with the princess, and she's very angry, but Obi-Wan apologizes that he can't be the one to take her home. And then he bends down and hands her Tala's gun belt. And he says, I have something for you. Roken found it. She would have wanted you to have it. And Leia runs her fingers over the notches and says, it's empty. Obi-Wan smiles and says, well, I wasn't going to give you a blaster, Leia. You're 10 years old, but you won't always be.
Yeah.
And I really love that Obi-Wan gets to give her a gift like he gives Luke in A New Hope.
Yeah.
That's cool.
There's like, I wish he had something of Padme's somehow to pass on to Leia, just to really complete that kind of reciprocity. Is that what? Yeah. Something like that would have been cool. Like if he, I know she was buried, cremated with it.
She's you're about to say exactly what I was thinking. The necklace Anakin made.
Right. I wish I get her being, did she get buried or cremated?
We just see the buried.
Yeah, we just see the casket. We don't really see
entombed.
Entombed. Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe our listeners can call into our voicemail hotline and let us know what happened to Padme's body. I don't think she was cremated though.
Yeah, I get why the emblem of her love for Anakin and Anakin's love for her kind of dies with her and doesn't emerge, you know, again. But it would have been cool if Obi-Wan ended up with it and could pass it on to Leia.
That would have been so cool. You know, probably in retrospect, had George known they were going to do an awesome Obi-Wan Kenobi series, might have made that decision.
Could have been done, yeah.
Yeah, but it's really, really cool, though. And so they hug, and then Leia asks him to please come back, and he gives her a promise he's not sure he can keep. And then later, he sits in the cargo hold as he holds his lightsaber in his hands, and he has a pensive gaze on his face, and he speaks out into the void one more time, and he says, I have to face him, Master. Whether he dies or I do, this ends today. And then he hangs his head, and for the briefest of moments, it feels like we're going to see or hear a response from Qui-Gon before Roken walks in.
Yeah, I was like, surely here. Hearing from his master is going to prepare him for the final fight ahead. But it didn't happen.
It was cool because like it kind of felt like it was supposed to, but then Roken kind of interrupts it. Right. And I kind of, so to me, it confirmed like, oh, we're going to get him later. Yeah. Like it kind of like made my anxiety calm a little bit. Now, towards the end of the episode, I was like, where's Qui-Gon?
I was getting like, I know we had talked about the fact that it is technically possible this wasn't going to happen, but we were pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Roken walks in and announces that they're all set. And then Roken tries one more time to convince Obi-Wan not to go. And before Obi-Wan leaves, he reminds Roken that there are not many leaders left, and that people follow him and not to stop. And then Roken smiles and says he's just getting started, and he leaves Obi-Wan behind. Now, Mac, do you think that we'll see any more of Roken in the future?
It's very possible. I'd love if a little bit older Roken ended up in Andor.
That would be cool.
After they've officially kind of transitioned into the Rebellion, you know, into the Rebel Alliance. I think that'd be a great spot for him to show up, you know?
Now, there were some rumors that came out yesterday. I don't know if you saw this, Mac, but there's some rumors that the character Cal Kestis from the Jedi Fallen Order games is getting his own Disney Plus series.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I hadn't heard that. I've been on the road.
If that's the case, to me, that kind of sounds like the premise for a season two that we had talked about, like basically do a season two of this, but it's the path and it doesn't really involve Obi-Wan at all.
Yeah.
But you continue a lot of the themes and ideas from the show with a different character. And he would be prime example of how to do that.
Yeah. I think that seems like maybe a likely way that they're intending all those little pieces to end up.
Yeah, that would be cool. It would be cool. It'd have to take place, I guess, after the second game that's about to come out. But we'll see. So Obi-Wan is resolved to do this. We cut to space where the transport opens its cargo hold and a smaller ship slips out. And on the Devastator, an officer announces that a ship with one life form aboard is slipping away. Darth Vader knows who it is, and the Grand Inquisitor tries to keep Vader on the freighter instead, like pursue the path. But Vader wants none of that, and he orders the ship to follow Kenobi instead. And I just got to say, the Star Destroyer looks great. Yeah. I've been really hard on the CGI in the series, and I think that was warranted, specifically the ships, but the Star Destroyer in this scene looks really, really good.
Again, you've got McGregor and Christensen, you know, salaries to pay. So,
and, you know, I saw something about this today. I don't know how accurate this is, but out of the Disney Plus Star Wars shows that they've done so far, this one got the least amount of budget towards it, which is crazy to me.
That, like, is wild.
Like $90 million was the budget for Obi-Wan Kenobi, and $100 million is what The Mandalorian gets.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, they probably knew it was going to be a little bit more of like a grounded show, you know, less big action set pieces and stuff, more smaller character moments. So maybe that could do it. It could also just be the fact that it was six episodes.
I don't understand. It's like, you got the power of Disney behind you. You literally print money. Like, I don't know what the problem would be.
Yeah. Especially when it's Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know? You've got Obi-Wan and Darth as the main characters. Like, it's not like that's not going to get butts in seats, you know?
Right. Right. I don't know. It's just an interesting aspect about Obi-Wan Kenobi as we finish it all up. But we cut back to the Lars homestead where the twin suns are starting to set. And under the cover of darkness, the Lars are getting ready for the assault. And Owen explains to Luke that the Tuskens are on the hunt again. And there's a good chance their farm is going to be attacked. I kind of love that they're lying to him in this way of, like, not to worry him, but like, hey, there's danger coming.
Yeah. It's like Obi-Wan says, like, they're just trying to let him be a boy, you know?
Yeah.
Just trying to let him have a normal childhood.
Yeah. And, like, honestly, going into this episode, I was a little worried about the continuity of, like, what does Luke know? How much does he know? So this was a good work around all of that. And I like that they did that.
Yeah.
So Owen tells him to stay hidden, but if anything goes wrong, he knows what to do, and that is run. Luke then says, I'm not afraid. I couldn't help but think of, first of all, Anakin's line from The Phantom Menace, but then also Luke says that again, right, in Empire Strikes Back to Yoda, I'm not afraid. And then Yoda says, you will be.
You will be. Yeah.
So Luke's never afraid.
I wish I had a Yoda. That's something, as a Star Wars fan, that is just missing from my toolkit.
Is a
Yoda...
Missing it is.
See, that's pretty good.
I like the happy, jovial Yoda more than the prequel Yoda.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But I like it after he's gone a little crazy.
Yeah. Isolation will do that to you.
Yeah. As we all know.
We have all experienced that. Owen says that he knows, and then Brew hugs him, promising everything will be okay. And then back in space, the tiny shuttle flies towards a desolate moon. And then on the Star Destroyer, Darth Vader orders his shuttle be prepared. He's going to face Obi-Wan alone. So not Mustafar. And honestly, I really like that choice.
I do too. So there's just a visual cue with lava and the fire and everything of Mustafar that's like, this conflict is reaching its zenith. Zenith.
Yeah.
It's actively happening now. And then this, you know, we'll get to what happens, but the barren looking setting, it's like, oh yeah, this is settled now. We're done.
Yeah.
But, like, the conflict's dead, you know?
Right. Yeah. And, like, so a lot of the concept art had shown Obi-Wan and Darth Vader fighting with lava, like, spewing up everywhere. And that's just concept art. So it doesn't mean that's actually going to happen. And I like the way that this planet, this desolate moon, really looked. I thought it was, like, this is a cool kind of setting, new for a lightsaber battle. And I like that.
It gave visual focus and priority on the lightsaber blades because everything else was just so barren, you know?
Yeah, and it was dark, too. I like that. It was at night, kind of dark.
It was almost like you were so far down into this forest of the little monoliths, rock spike things that it was like, oh, they're like blocking light from reaching this spot, you know?
Yeah, it was really cool.
It was a cool setting. I liked it.
Yeah, so the escape craft sets down among rocky monoliths, and Obi-Wan sits back in his seat tensely. In space, an Imperial shuttle flies down, and then back in the escape craft, Obi-Wan finds Lola in his robes, and he smiles as he sees her because Leia gave it to him so he wouldn't be scared.
Yeah.
You know, so Leia was thinking of him, and I love that.
Yeah. She's just like, I love little Leia.
She's
just the best kid, and then obviously grows into the, you know, amazing leader she will be.
Yeah. So he sets Lola down on the console and begins prepping himself for the battle to come. And he opens the doors and leaves Lola behind. And then back on Tatooine, a cloaked figure arrives at the alarms homestead. And down in the sublevel courtyard, the alarms are going off so that they know that she's there. And then back at the barren moon, the Imperial shuttle descends through the clouds and sits down. And Darth Vader emerges in the fog. Obi-Wan waits for him. And Vader walks briskly ahead. And like we said, I really love the way that it looks, the way that the moon in the background is really hanging between them. We get that kind of Kylo Ren, Luke Skywalker look type thing where they're like standing far apart, but staring each other down like samurai.
Yeah.
Really cool. And then Vader asks, "Have you come to destroy me, Obi-Wan?" And then Obi-Wan answers, "I will do what I must," echoing his line from Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
And then he twirls his saber into the Clone Wars stance.
Yeah, with the two fingers out. I was glad we got to see that.
Yeah, so that's something he did often in the animated series, so it was really cool that they echoed that here.
Yeah.
So,
we know that he did that after this time because we see it in Rebels as well. Spoiler alert for Rebels, I guess, after I've already said it. But
everybody watch Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah.
If you want more Obi-Wan content, watch Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah. Vader, I don't know if that's the best way to pitch that show.
I'm trying to trick people into it. Vader says, "Then you will die." And the rematch of the century is on, and Obi-Wan is in his element. He's back, baby. Obi-Wan is at full strength.
Full effect.
Yeah. We get a lot of the moves that they have at the beginning of this are very similar to what we saw in the flashback. They even go back to back at some point.
Yeah. It's almost like an abbreviated version of that entire fight.
Yeah. And Obi-Wan gets Vader on the defensive, and then we cut back to Tatooine where Reva sulks into the courtyard, igniting her red lightsaber. And then Owen and Beru hide out watching, and Reva looks carefully when Owen suddenly opens fire, and then Beru joins in. Owen moves up to a landing, and as he fires, he begins kicking some potted plants down on her.
It's like, poor plants.
Yeah, I know. She's blocking their assault, and then we cut back to the desolate moon where Obi-Wan and Vader continue their fight through the craggy pillars. Lots of strikes and parries, and then I'm very excited because Obi-Wan reaches out to one of the craggy pillars with the Force to topple it over onto Vader. And I just really love the use of the Force in this fight.
Yeah.
It's something that we've had discussions about before, but it's really cool to see like a Jedi so confident that they don't even have to use their lightsaber at moments. It's like something like Yoda and Palpatine have done, you know, so it's really cool to see that starting to take place here.
Yeah, I'm just like, when you have the most powerful Force users in the galaxy kind of together, like, why would they even bother with lightsabers, you know?
Right.
Like, why hit you with a laser sword when I can throw a mountain at you, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. So Vader says, "Your strength has returned," and then using the Force to keep the pillar from dropping on him, he then says, "But the weakness still remains." And then with incredible strength, Vader tosses the pillar away and back at Obi-Wan. And then Vader is able to trip Obi-Wan up with a rock and then slams his hand down on the ground, using the Force to open up the ground beneath Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
And then Vader says, "And that is why you will always lose." And the ground buckles beneath Obi-Wan, giving Darth Vader the high ground. I love that.
Yeah, I'm glad that they didn't say, like, now I have the high ground or anything like that. But we did get the visual reference. Like, I feel like that shot was pointed to be like, look at Vader, he's got the high ground this time.
I really thought he might say something, but I'm kind of glad that they didn't.
I'm so glad that they didn't. I don't know that there's a way to do that delivery without it just killing all, like, dramatic momentum.
Yeah, because then it becomes a meme. Yeah.
Like, this, we do have a meme reference in this episode, but it came at the perfect time, you know?
Oh, yes. Yes. So, yeah, I love the use of the Force right here. Like, the way that he just rips the ground open. I just love the rage that they portray Darth Vader with in this series. They've done such a good job with him, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Just
especially
showing,
in this scene, he's just moving so much differently than we've seen him even in this same show.
Yeah.
So it's just like lending to that, the emotionality of it all. And like, I love that they let his cape furl up a bunch, so you get to see just like his body moving.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I feel like you actually get to see like his fighting stances and stuff in this scene, whereas normally he's kind of shrouded in the cape, you know?
Yeah, I love it. It was so good. I can't wait to rewatch this episode again. It's so much fun. Obi-Wan looks up at Vader, looking over him, and then Vader begins burying Obi-Wan in the crater with more and more boulders. Obi-Wan keeps his hand outstretched, but he's overwhelmed by Vader's assault. And then, when he's completely covered, Vader asks, "Did you truly think you could defeat me? You have failed, Master." And I like the way he says master with a bit of venom there. That was really good.
Yeah. It's like patronizing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you're not my master anymore. Ha ha.
I showed you, dad.
I have the high ground now. I have the high ground. And he's beating his chest. So yeah, Vader turns off his saber and then leaves behind the buried pit. Back on Tatooine, Reva approaches Owen on a bridge in the courtyard. Owen, to his credit, doesn't back down. He's not like running away. With the Force, Reva throws a crate at Owen and knocks Owen to his feet. And then Reva acknowledges that Owen really loves the boy, like he's his own. And Owen says, "He is my own."
I loved that so much. What a
good
moment.
How could you not?
I know. I'm just like, yeah. Yeah.
Go, Owen. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's showing us like a different side of Owen, because like what we see in A New Hope, he kind of sucks. And like he's not, you know.
Yeah. This show kind of makes you understand that like a lot of his rough edges is really like a defense mechanism.
Yes.
Like he's had to develop wild habits to protect Luke in the way that he has, you know. Yeah. And even now we see like from the truth. Like he's protecting Luke just from knowing the reality of the situation, you know?
Yeah.
So that like living a life like that, you know, is gonna make you a little rough around the edges, probably.
Yeah. But, especially when that kid is about like begging to get off the farm at that point.
Right. It's like, I worked for 20 years to make sure you never left this planet.
Yeah. Are water evaporators not good enough for you, Luke? And so, yeah, he says he is my own and then attacks Reva with a long metal pole. And then he says, "What do you want?" And she says, "Justice." And then Owen punches her in the wound. And eventually she throws him off the bridge after cutting the pole in half. And then Owen yells to Beru that Reva is coming. And as she enters, Beru attacks Reva just like straight up, like no fear, just jumps on her. And I loved it. And, you know, that's what a mom would do. That's mom instincts just kicking in there, like mama bear's protecting her cub.
Yeah, for sure.
And I loved it. So Beru attacks Reva as Luke doesn't see it. He's climbing out of the room. He's missing all the action. He doesn't see the lightsaber or anything like that.
Yeah.
He's still thinking that these are Tuskens. And then Luke runs away from the homestead out into the desert, and Reva exits with her hood up and pursues him. And then back on the barren moon, Obi-Wan is still alive in the small air bubble, And I thought right here, okay, maybe we're going to hear Qui-Gon.
Yeah.
Right here. Like,
this is also each time it doesn't happen, I'm like, immediately, okay, this is now where it's going to happen. And then it doesn't.
Yeah. This was
until I finally start to accept, like, maybe it's not going to happen. And then it happens.
It was kind of good the way that they strung us along a little bit. Cause I was getting kind of nervous about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is Obi-Wan Spider-Man moment right here, where, you know, like, just the weight of everything's literally on him. He's being crushed in every sense of the way, and he's using the Force to keep from being crushed as his memories assault him with his guilt. We hear Anakin's voice interchanging with Vader's, and he's about to be crushed when suddenly he begins remembering what's most important to him, Leia and Luke. And then he begins thinking about them, and that gives him the strength to push out with the Force, and he liberates himself from the rubble and leaps out.
Yeah. It's remembering his purpose.
Yes.
And remembering that there's still hope. Like, everything looks super bleak. Things have been super bleak for a long time. But he's just been reminded that there's a hope out there, like, in the future. And he has an active role that he can take in, like, fostering that future.
Hope survives, Mac. Hope survives. So, meanwhile, Vader is walking back from the monolith towards his ship. But then he stops, sensing something. And suddenly, the battle is back on again. Obi-Wan attacks him from behind. And Obi-Wan gets the upper hand. And actually force throws Vader against a monolith. And then one of the coolest moments in Star Wars, in my opinion, Obi-Wan lifts his hands and the boulders begin lifting behind him.
Yeah.
This epic music is playing. The rocks levitate higher and higher in the air. And then with a small pump of his hands, he sends them all at Vader. It's an absolute barrage of boulders. And Vader can't stop any of them.
Nah. Too many, not too once. Fast.
Once the barrage is complete, Vader takes a mighty swing and Obi-Wan intercepts it, and then they circle each other. It is so epic. This is like what I was hoping we would get, and I thought that this whole fight sequence delivered for me. I mean, it was really good.
Yeah, I'm a person that, like, action can sometimes kind of bore me, like, if it goes on for too long. Like, I'd rather have shorter, more intense, like, action pieces, or longer ones that are narratively important.
Yeah.
So they're not just like, okay, here's some action to look at and have fun with. That's fun, but only for a short time for me.
Right.
Fights where the characters, like, you're learning about the characters through the fight. That's my favorite kind of thing. And this was for sure that.
I feel like Deborah Chow, like, really directed these lightsaber battles in a very different way, in a unique way we haven't actually seen a lot before. A lot of handheld, very close up on their face for a lot of the battle stuff here. And I thought that made it more personal.
Absolutely. It also, I think, lets you get away with some of the kind of larger than life, like, theatrical moves and stuff, while keeping that kind of grounded sense of realism.
Yes. You know,
like Phantom Menace, the fight's incredible, but because everything is so steady and wide all the time, you can kind of see the choreography, like, in the Duel of the Fates,
like,
you know,
it's like
you
a dance
come through. Right. Yeah. Right. And that's still fun to look at for a while. But this way you still have that theatricality, the dance of it all, but focusing closer in on kind of the characters gives priority to you're remembering, like, what this means about the story, you know?
Yeah. And that's what you're focused on in all those scenes. And, like, they even did some of the same moves from episode 3. Like, I don't know if you noticed, like, the spinning of the lightsabers and stuff. It was the same. So I thought that was cool. So meanwhile, Reva pursues Luke into the rocky crevasse. And he searches for Luke, and she's searching for Luke, and he's doing his best to get away. Back on the moon, Vader tries to the old steal your lightsaber trick that we saw in the flashback, but Obi-Wan's ready for it, and he actually holds on to it, and he begins pummeling his breathing apparatus on his chest with the pummel of his own lightsaber. Yeah. And it's causing it to spark and disrupt his breathing. Vader's trying to stop him, but Obi-Wan throws a rock into his head. I mean, it is just brutal. Vader is losing steam and falls to the ground. And then this is when Obi-Wan knows he's got his chance. He runs. Obi-Wan slashes him across the back. Okay, I do have to pause for a second. Why do I still feel bad about Vader? Like, every time Vader starts to get beat, I start to feel bad.
Our culture's relationship with Darth Vader is hard.
Yeah.
Because he is the villain that we all love. You know?
I feel bad for him in this moment. I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, like, and this series, more than anything, has firmly cemented him as a bad dude. But I'm with you. I think it's just we've liked how he looks and sounds for so long. Like, as kids, you're not thinking of Darth Vader. He's a bad guy, but you're not thinking of him as, like, a bad person.
You know? Yeah. Well,
does that make sense?
And then, like, maybe even on another layer, we're thinking, oh, man, this is Anakin.
Yeah.
This is Anakin. This is the little boy on Tatooine who is pod racing to save his friends. This is the same guy who fell in love with Padme, who Obi-Wan was his brother. Like, this is that same guy. What are you doing? You know, and you just can't help but, like, I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, when you have that family that always does something, right? And you're like, oh, my gosh. And, like, everyone else has written them off, but you haven't because they're, you know, your family.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that moment of, like, come on, Darth Vader. Come on.
Get it together.
Get it together. So, yeah, Vader groans as he gets back to his feet, and the two clash again. And then Obi-Wan force shoves him across the dirt, and then Obi-Wan charges for the ending blow. And he jumps up and slashes down across Vader's helmet in the same place we see the huge scar in Empire and Return of the Jedi. It was already there, but he hits in the same spot again.
Yeah.
And so I guess it took a long time to heal that part.
Yeah. My only criticism of the fight is I just would have changed the location in which Vader got his mask opened up, you know?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we've seen it hit in the exact same place by two separate combatants. I just feel like in a fight, things usually kind of happen a little bit more randomly, you know?
But we haven't... Okay, so to push back on that a little bit, we haven't actually seen that in live action like that before. Whereas a lot of people have not seen... Watch Star Wars Rebels if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Is that what you're referring to? What's the second one? What's the other one?
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about in Rebels.
Okay.
Ahsoka and Obi-Wan now.
It's the same spot. Yeah.
Like, I wanted his mask opened up because I wanted to be able to see, you know, Hayden for the performance and for when we inevitably had the conversation after the fight, you know?
Yeah.
I just would have opened it up in a different area. You know, the other side.
Or maybe he just takes the whole thing off at that point.
Yeah.
And just, like, has the breathing thing in front of his face, making him look like Darth Malik.
Yeah.
Or something. But another KOTOR reference. Yeah. Vader's helmet is cracked open and sparking. He can barely breathe. Obi-Wan staggers back and his lightsaber is still at the ready, but noticing that the battle is finished, Obi-Wan slowly starts to relax, and Vader looks up, and we can see Hayden in there. It's Hayden Christensen.
Yeah.
And I love what they did with the makeup and the lighting. Like, I'm really glad it's at night, so it kind of makes it a little more spooky looking.
Oh, yeah.
And Obi-Wan is just absolutely horrified at what he sees, as we all would, I think.
Yeah, right? I mean, also, he did that.
You know? Exactly. Yeah, like, it's terrifying. And, like, you can hear... Ewan McGregor does such a great job in this scene. Like, phenomenal acting on his part and Hayden's part when he says, Anakin. Like, you can hear the heartbreak there. And Vader replies through a distorted voice that goes between James Earl Jones and his own voice.
I liked that.
So good. Yeah. He said, Anakin is gone. I am what remains. And Obi-Wan is heartbroken and in anguish. And he says, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Anakin. for all of it. And the music, oh man, the music is so good right here. I can't wait until this comes out on Spotify. And then, oh my gosh, this line right here, Mac.
Oh yeah.
It is left an imprint on me that I don't think I'm ever going to forget. He says, "I am not your failure, Obi-Wan. You didn't kill Anakin Skywalker." And his face is lit with the blue glow of Obi-Wan's blade. And he says, "I did."
Yeah. What? I mean, so that one, I think that's the most important line of the whole series, just as yeah. far as the information it lets us know about this relationship, you know? Mm. The whole series, Obi-Wan has been struggling with guilt, maybe some shame, and just replaying every opportunity he could have done something differently in his head to prevent this that he feels is entirely his fault.
Yeah.
And like in this moment, you can see like he's released from that in this conversation, you know?
And part of me, like, I don't know if I'm interpreting this wrong, and maybe it is up for interpretation. It kind of felt like Darth Vader / Anakin was giving him that release a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, no, like, it's
weird.
Very nuanced situation, but I feel that as well. Like,
yeah.
I think, like, deep
like,
down...
Like, don't blame yourself.
Right, like, and I mean, you're going to say that, too, if you're trying to convince yourself that you're evil
exactly.
and dark to do what you're trying to accomplish, you know?
Exactly.
But him saying that, there was like a little bit of benevolence in there almost. Mm-hmm. It could be wishful thinking, but
I don't know. But like even the way that Hayden delivered it, it plays that way. And I thought it was like a phenomenal way to deliver the line because it really is like he's bragging about it. Number one, like to himself, like I yeah. did this, you had nothing to do with it. But he's also letting Obi-Wan off the hook.
Right.
Because he knows he needs it.
Yeah. And I think there's like some acceptance and regret in there too. Cause he's
yeah.
like, I did this to myself, you know?
Yeah. Oh my God. It's so good.
It's just such a charged line. When he said that, my whole world got rocked a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm like, I have to rethink Star Wars now.
I know. I know. It's so good. And so, yeah, the blue light starts to die out on Obi-Wan's face and the red glow of Vader's saber is all that remains. And then we get the horrifying shot of that red glow on the battle-damaged Vader.
Yeah.
And he says, "The same way I will destroy you." And he kind of smiles and smirks a little bit.
Yeah.
That turn from like Anakin to Vader happened very visually with the blue glow and the red glow. So awesome.
Yeah. And that's why I think the visual cues that are reinforcing the emotion behind this scene
yeah.
is why we felt that, you know,
yeah.
like it's just such a well-crafted exchange.
Oh, so good. And then Obi-Wan says, "Then my friend is truly dead." And Vader can barely stand. Obi-Wan then says, "Goodbye, Darth."
Yeah.
And like he calls Darth Vader Darth in A New Hope. He doesn't yeah. call him Vader. And then Vader watches him leave and he says, "Obi-Wan." And then he yells his name one more time as we cut to Obi-Wan flying away in his transport. And then we cut to Reva still stalking Luke, and she has found him, and she uses the Force to pull him off the ledge. But of course, Luke doesn't know that, and he slips, and he's knocked out. And I like the way that this is all handled. He's not really aware of anything that's going on here. And she closes in on him full of rage, and she activates her red lightsaber. And as she is closer, she suddenly sees the younger version of herself laying there.
Yeah.
And she remembers Order 66. And she tries to fight away the memories to kill Luke. And she raises her saber, but she's hesitating. And then in space, Obi-Wan's ship arrives outside Tatooine and then lands at the Lars homestead. And when Obi-Wan comes out, he sees Owen and Beru shouting out for Luke. And then he asks Beru where he is. And she says they'll search the Dune Sea until they find him. But then Beru spots something in the distance and she calls out for Ben. And then we see the cloaked figure approaching, holding the body of Luke. We'll talk about it when this whole exchange is done.
Yeah.
Just about some things.
Yeah.
Owen limps to his wife's side as they gravely watch Reva approach, and she falls to the ground and places Luke's body on the ground. Is he alive or dead? Of course, as an audience, we know that he's alive.
Right.
But, you know, in the moment, those people don't know what's going on. But then Luke stirs, and Owen and Beru rush to his side, clearly relieved, and Owen picks him up and carries him away from Reva. And she remains on her knees and doubles over in tears. I think phenomenal job by Moses Ingram in this sequence. Does a great job.
Just, she brought such passion to this role in terms of, like, everything Reva's doing is motivated by these super intense emotions like grief, loss, you know, regret, things like that. And just, it's on the surface, like right there in the performance, like it's evident. So yeah, Moses Ingram did a fantastic job in the whole show.
Yeah. I really do like the way that she's like, this scene is really, really impactful. But I do have questions about it.
Yeah. Writing is different from performance.
Yeah. Obi-Wan approaches as she mumbles that she couldn't do it, that she failed him. Who did she fail? Who's him?
Yeah.
So, and then she goes on to say, he killed them all and I couldn't do it. Obi-Wan says, you haven't failed them. Oh, so maybe that's what, but it said
them.
In the subtitles, it says him, but yeah, maybe that's what it's supposed to be, is them.
Maybe. I had the same question. Them made more sense, like, as in referring to
Padawans,
the group of children she was part of. And then I took it that, like, she could have been singling out a single youngling
maybe
that she had a friendship with or whatever, maybe. But
it kind of plays like Vader.
Yeah. Or Obi-Wan in a weird way.
Yeah, it's very confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah, Obi-Wan then says, you haven't failed them. By showing mercy, you have given them peace. You have honored them. Now, I really like that line right there, because the last episode when we saw the flashback, Anakin said something along the lines of, mercy makes you weak.
Yeah.
And so, like, Obi-Wan is showing, no, mercy makes you strong. That brings peace. And so I like that contrast right there. And then through her tears, she asks, have I become him? Now, I do like that line. I love that question of, like, oh my gosh, have I become the thing that I've been hating all my life?
Yeah.
And then he says, no, you have chosen not to. Who you become now, that is up to you. And then she shifts her gaze to the desert, and she unclips her saber from her uniform. Sobbing, she drops her weapon, and Obi-Wan rises to his feet and offers a hand, and she accepts it. And Obi-Wan says, now you are free. We both are.
Yeah.
So, okay, like, it's not clear. It's not explicitly clear if she knows who Luke Skywalker is.
Right.
And I think it's intentional that it's not clear.
Yeah. She knows he's connected to Anakin.
It seems that way. Yes, like, that is the read that I am getting. The reason she went to go do this, like, I've seen, like, a lot of people just questioning, like, what was the purpose of her doing this anyway? The purpose was she wanted vengeance on Obi-Wan for, like, tricking her into attacking Vader. That's my read on it.
I disagree.
You think she knows that's Anakin's son?
At least connected to him. I mean, she...
I don't like that.
She's wanting vengeance on Vader.
See, I took it... my headcanon was trying to make it not that.
Yeah.
And saying, like, she's taking vengeance on Obi-Wan. She knew that Obi-Wan, like, cared for this boy, and she might not know what the connection was, so she's going to take him out.
She only knew that this boy was connected to Leia, who everybody seemed to be after.
Well, she doesn't know that.
I thought the call from Bail.
Yeah, but she doesn't know
both.
She doesn't know that it's, well, in the broken transmission, she just hears Owen, Tatooine, boy. That's all she hears.
Yeah, I'm just I think she's doing more deduction and using context clues and stuff.
For sure. Yeah.
To me, the only way her trip to Tatooine makes sense is if she's trying to get revenge on Vader. I mean, that's her whole motivation. That's her whole character.
I just don't know how I feel about, like, someone knowing that information, especially, like, a former Inquisitor. Now, she's redeemed. This is the thing that we all got to keep in mind. Star Wars is a fairy tale in space. It's mythology. Like, if she's redeemed, she's redeemed. That's the thing. She's not going to give that information away to Vader. No. But, like, in the real world, Obi-Wan would be like, "You're getting stabbed a third time. I'm sorry."
Right.
I'm sorry to do this.
Oh, that would be the third time, huh?
Yeah.
Yikes. I don't know. I think maybe that'll be something I'll pay attention to when I do sit down to watch this all in one chunk. Is just like, what do I think Reva's thinking as she goes to Tatooine? You know, after knowing what information was made available to her.
Yeah, like, my play on it was just that, okay, this boy's important to Obi-Wan. He wanted to protect him. I don't know who he is. I'm going to go kill him. But then she starts to deduce towards the end, obviously through their conversation, oh, this might be Anakin's son.
Yeah.
I would have really loved a scene, and this is, you know, armchair quarterbacking right here, you know, like, who am I to say this? I'm just a person. But it would have been really cool if she could have asked, who was he anyway to you? Like indicating to the audience, oh, she didn't even know who he was. Right. She just knew that he was important. And then Obi-Wan, like, look back and say, our only hope. Like, that's a little cheesy, but, like, I don't know. I kind of like it.
I mean, like, it probably just depends on the performance, score, setting, and context for me.
Well, we do get a very similar thing of that between Maul and Obi-Wan in Star Wars Rebels, yeah. Where Maul basically went to go do the same thing, and he kind of asked, like, is he the one? Is he the chosen one? And Obi-Wan's like, yeah, he's got us, basically. Like, we're good. So, yeah. So I don't know how I feel about that even right now. Like, in the morning when I watched that whole scene, that's the one thing that kind of stood out to me of, like, I don't know how I feel about all of that, because, like, where it led to and now what we're left with, I just don't know. Like, it kind of feels like a loose end a little bit, but, like, also on the flip side of that, I am really glad that she survives, because we've never really seen a dark side character redeemed and then have to face the consequences and live with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that is cool.
I am excited about that. So maybe let's get through the rest of the breakdown and let's revisit this. Cause this is one of my, like, overall,
yeah,
I'm going to get into overall thoughts next time we talk about this particular scene.
Got it. Okay. So, yeah, so we then cut to a sulfurous cloud, and we descend down to Mustafar, heading towards Vader's castle. In his fortress, Vader speaks to a hologram.
Yep. You already know who it is.
That was really cool. That was a nice little surprise right there.
Yeah.
And he's talking to Emperor Palpatine, and he promises to find Obi-Wan, but the hologram of Emperor Palpatine is not impressed at all. In fact, he seems kind of concerned, Mac.
Yeah.
He kind of notes how upset Vader is, and then goes on to say, "I wonder if your thoughts are clear on this, Lord Vader. Perhaps your feelings of your old master have left you weakened. If your past cannot be overcome, ...
Yeah.
And then finally Vader declares, "Kenobi means nothing. I serve only you, my master." So this scene kind of, honestly, I thought it was actually a really good scene in hindsight of, like, this is Vader kind of giving up that obsession with Kenobi for now until he, you know, comes back to the Death Star.
Yeah. And it makes sense now when he says, like, last time we met, like,
I was just about the learner.
I was but the learner. Now I've become the master.
Yeah.
he did lose this fight, so that like that makes more narrative sense now, yeah. I guess. But yeah, having Palpatine come in kind of explains how he's able to just go about the next 10 years or so without
pursuing it,
really going after any of these leads. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, maybe even Palpatine's like, listen, if you face him again, he might kill you. Don't do this. You need to let this go.
Like, you, he almost had you there.
Yeah, it's 2 out of 3 at this point. I mean, he's got you beat.
Yeah. Yeah. We also get to see Palpatine. Younger is not the word. So in Revenge of the Sith, his face is still very much looking like a fresh wound, you know? Here, yes. It's had time to settle, but it's not quite as, like, weathered and aged as when we see next time, like in Empire.
It's not as saggy. Still.
Yeah. He's got a little bit more retention.
Honestly, it kind of looked like the Empire Strikes Back version.
It was more hologram. That model for sure, but just like a few years before, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Not the original version, though, was an old lady with orangutan eyes for whatever reason.
I love that. Yeah.
Do you remember what it used to look like?
I do. Everybody can go on YouTube and search that up and look what the original version used to be.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
The special editions are a double-edged sword. Sometimes you get weird stuff. Sometimes you get pretty good fixes.
Yeah. So the transmission ends and Darth Vader's theme plays as we pull away from the lonesome Vader, who now is giving up his pursuit of Obi-Wan Kenobi, and we cut to black. And then we open back up on Alderaan, in the royal bedroom. Leia readies herself and puts on her gloves from Dayu and then straps Tala's gun belt on her hip. Yeah. And then Brea, her adoptive mother, enters to see, asking if she's wearing a holster. And then Brea actually smiles and says she loves it.
Brea seems like the kind of mom who has just learned that if she just goes with it,
it's better.
It's easier.
Yeah, it's better that way. Yeah. Then we cut to a landing pad as Bail waits, and Brea and Leia joins him. Bail notices the gun belt too, and Leia remarks how there are many ways to lead. And she says, "If I'm going to do this, then I'm going to want to change a few things." And then proudly, Bail says, "Then let's change things together."
Oh.
It's good.
All of Bail and Brea's scenes with little Leia have been so incredible in this
so
show.
Good. So good. I could watch like just a whole series of the Organas doing stuff on Alderaan.
I would watch like a sitcom. Just like
like with a laugh track and everything.
20-minute, 3-camera sitcom. Just 100%. With the Organas.
Yeah, like every episode, Leia has to learn like a critical life lesson as Bail sits down. Like that music plays, you know, like, for sure.
It's the perfect premise. It's just like, you know, classics like Fresh Prince or Full House, where you've got, you know, hijinks ensue, but you can always kind of bring it back in at the end of the day for a real nice life lesson type thing from Bail.
Absolutely.
I mean, it writes itself. Come on.
I love it. Then Obi-Wan comes off the ship with Lola, and excitedly, Leia is reunited with Lola, and Obi-Wan hugs Bail and then shakes Brea's hand, and Bail admits he fears for Leia's future because the Empire is growing stronger and bolder, but Obi-Wan says that if he ever needs his help again, he knows where to find him, referencing A New Hope.
It's almost like they're setting the stage for a future event.
Yes. And then Bail says, "Let's hope that day never comes." And then Obi-Wan turns towards Leia, and Leia says, "So what will you do now?" And Obi-Wan says, "I don't know. What do you think I should do?" And then she says, "I think you should sleep." Heard that. Because, like,
both of us got not great night's rest before this. So early this morning, just groggy hearing this, it resonated in my soul.
Just FYI, I've had like, I think, 8 hours of sleep in the last 48 hours.
Man.
Just not been able to sleep very well. So it's amazing that I'm functioning. Yeah. So yeah, she says, I think you should sleep. They both laugh, and I love the laugh because it's the first time we actually genuinely see Obi-Wan laugh in the series.
Yeah, like
the joy is back.
He's finally himself enough to laugh now.
Yeah. Obi-Wan agrees. Oh my gosh, this scene right here. Oh, Mac. Obi-Wan agrees and then lowers himself to her. And honestly, I don't know how you can keep a dry eye in this scene.
I didn't.
As Leia's theme begins to play, like, it is one of the most touching scenes in all of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And I'm getting choked up just talking about it. Leia, he says, Leia, when I said before that I didn't know about your parents, and then he pauses and he says, Princess Leia Organa, you are wise, discerning, kind-hearted. These are qualities that came from your mother, but you are also passionate and fearless, forthright, yeah. And these are gifts from your father. Both were exceptional people who bore an exceptional daughter.
Yeah.
I wish I could tell you more. That is good stuff.
Oh, man. It just says so much about his internal journey through the show in this line. Like, he's finally gotten to a place where he can accept what has happened, right? And then find the good in it. Remember the good times and the people that were, you know?
Yeah.
The person Anakin was, the person Padme was, he's able to kind of traverse his own memories, I think, again.
It felt like and maybe part of the reason I get, like, I'm getting emotional just, like, hearing that line of dialogue, reading it, is because it's almost like a eulogy for the prequels.
Yeah.
You know, like, the characters that we loved are gone. You know, and like, of course, Vader has an opportunity to come back through Luke. And the series did a great job of showing, like, what a great job Luke did to getting through to Vader, because, like, literally nobody else could.
Yeah.
It's just very powerful lines, and I loved it so much because it made me think of Padme and Anakin and
Luke
and Leia will become.
Yeah, and it reflects, like, gave me time to sit there and reflect on my own fond memories of the prequel
yes,
era.
Exactly.
You know?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So, Leia has the perfect response as she looks up at her adoptive parents and says, "It's okay. You don't have to. Thank you." Yeah. I love that too. It's like she also has accepted, like, I don't really need to know them because I've got the perfect set of parents right over there.
Right. I have these two.
Amazing. They're amazing.
Like,
we're going to do a sitcom together. Yeah. Yeah. So then she asks, will I ever see you again? I couldn't help but think of the Phantom Menace when Anakin asked Shmi that.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan says, maybe someday if you ever need help from a tired old man, but we must be careful. No one must know, or it could endanger us both. And then she hugs him and tells him goodbye. And then he says, goodbye, princess. May the Force be with you. And the classic Star Wars Force theme plays as he turns to exit, and we transition into Obi-Wan's theme as the Organas watch Obi-Wan leave. And as the ship takes off and departs, Leia returns home with her parents. Mission accomplished.
Done.
Later on Tatooine, Obi-Wan is in the classic Jedi robes as he packs up his caves. That's his best look, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He was looking sharp.
He was looking good. Especially the very, very end. Like, that is Obi-Wan's best look, and I don't want any arguments about that because that is the final answer.
With the goggles. I'd agree with that.
Oh, my gosh. He notices the T-16 toy and puts it in his bag, and he's finally ready to move on. At the Lars homestead, Owen sees Obi-Wan riding towards the home. Nearby, Luke is helping out on the farm. And Owen goes out to meet Obi-Wan, and he asks what he's doing there. He thought he was going to keep his distance. And finally, Obi-Wan agrees with Owen. He says, you were right. He just needs to be a boy.
Yeah.
And they both watch Luke as Obi-Wan says that the future will take care of itself and that the only protection Luke needs now comes from Owen and Beru. And then he asks Owen to take care of him, and quietly Owen says that he will, that he's going to. And as Obi-Wan turns to leave, Owen debates with himself. You can kind of see that on his face. And then finally he says, "Ben, do you want to meet him?"
Yeah.
And then Obi-Wan smiles. Owen's kind of smiling. I like this. This was unexpected. Again, I thought there would be like this curmudgeon, like, stay away from him, never come around here again.
I mean, like, everybody just went through so much. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, Obi-Wan's earned it at this point.
Yes, he has. And so Obi-Wan smiles and brings Luke the T-16 Skyhopper that we see him playing with in A New Hope in one hand. And then Luke grins. He's just grinning. Like, I loved, like, I just love the energy this little kid playing Luke is exuding. It's like, That's Luke Skywalker. Just like, what a nice boy.
There's just like a purity to it.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And that's like, that's what Luke is. He's kind of the ideal, you know?
Yeah. Luke grins as Obi-Wan approaches. And then Obi-Wan says, "Hello there."
Yeah, we got it.
We finally got it.
We had to get one, right?
Yeah, and he's just like, I really love the look with the robe and his classic Jedi robes and then the goggles. That is actually exactly what he's wearing in the Star Wars comics, the latest Marvel ones that we see. That is his outfit, and I love it.
Yeah.
Really, really cool. And then, like, I will admit, the first watch, I was getting a little nervous. I was like, oh, this is no Qui-Gon.
I was too. I was like, okay.
Dang. Yeah, and then later, Obi-Wan rides his Eopie through the Tatooine Desert alone, and he's approaching a rocky pass, but the heat is shimmering, and faintly, a ghostly mirage begins to appear.
Mm-hmm.
It is the form of Qui-Gon Jinn, and I was so pumped to see this. It was so cool. Like, my prequel-loving heart loved every second of this.
Got the hair extensions back. It was amazing.
And he says, "Master Qui-Gon," and Qui-Gon Jinn turns and he says, "Well, took you long enough."
Yeah.
Perfect.
That's exactly what Qui-Gon would say. Nailed it.
And Obi-Wan says, "Beginning to think you'd never come." And then Qui-Gon Jinn says, "I was always here, Obi-Wan. You were just not ready to see. Come on, we've got a ways to go." Oh, I love it. Qui-Gon Jinn turns and leads as he vanishes, and Obi-Wan follows after his old Jedi master as the twin sons of Tatooine begins to set behind the rocky outcropping, and then we cut to black.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so good. Man.
All right, so we'll do our best in this final little reflection.
Yeah.
Let's reflect on the episode.
Yes.
More than anything. You can't talk about a finale without talking about the series as a whole. But we are going to save our kind of overall reflection until the next Hello There Hotline episode.
Yeah.
So wait for that one.
And you guys, that's what you should call in with. If you don't have any theories, you're like, I don't know what to call in with. Well, tell us what you thought about the series overall, your favorite parts, stuff like that.
Right. Or, you know, criticisms of the series are totally valid too. Like, you know, if there's something we missed, like, let us know.
Yeah.
But
let's start with criticisms first, because I feel like that's, I like getting that out of the way and then ending on a positive note.
Yeah. And we'll keep it real brief, cause I know we're already running pretty long, but I really, really liked, the finale as a whole. I thought there was a few missed opportunities just to up the emotional journey, just to kind of put more into like Obi-Wan's internal struggles throughout the series, and then in this episode, I think if we had wrapped Reva's storyline up last episode, I think the finale might have benefited from it ultimately. Just focusing on the Vader Obi-Wan stuff and then the Leia and Luke stuff.
Yeah.
I get that it's hard to just jump back to Tatooine at that point.
Yeah.
So you kind of need an end there. I really liked Reva's story, and I think this show kind of had three different examples of a journey through grief and loss, and kind of a fall, and then kind of three different outcomes for how to move on through that. You've got Vader, who doesn't.
Right.
He's just stuck in it, you know?
Yeah.
You've got Obi-Wan, who, you know, has walked the straight and narrow kind of the whole time, but just has been absent and you know, gets back in the fight, kind of rediscovers his purpose. And then you've got Reva. I think it's a great example of how, like, one thing can accidentally define you if you let it, you know, and then the ability to move on from there, you know, afterwards. So I think we could have wrapped up Reva maybe last episode. Because I really like her being in the series. I just don't know that much focus. And, like, cutting back and forth in between the fights
took some of the tension out of it,
I think, a little bit.
It just, it felt, and maybe, I don't know, it felt odd. And like, I don't know if I can specifically pinpoint what it was. Because, like, I loved Moses Ingram's performance. I love her character, and I love her character arc, but for whatever reason, it didn't work in this particular episode with where she's left off with. And so, like, I don't know if it would have worked better for Owen and Beru to take her out, not allowing her that opportunity to be redeemed.
Right.
But personally, like, I like that she's still alive. What I don't like, I think, most of all, is, like, if she knows that's Luke Skywalker. Like, that is, you know, like, that's Anakin Skywalker. Like, that is a part that I think bothers me the most, if that is the case. But it's, like, left kind of weirdly vague. Like, we're not really sure what she knows and what she doesn't. But it seems like she does know.
Yeah.
And it just, maybe the clunkiness of that whole thing is what my, like, what I'm honing in on. Of, like, I don't. It feels a little clunky right there of, like, what does she know? What does she not know? What are her motivations in even going to kill Luke?
Right. Yeah, it's like Reva's story in and of itself is really engaging, makes a lot of sense. It's just, like, in the way that it interacts with the other narrative threads in the show is where some of the clunkiness comes in. And I think it's mainly just kind of here at the finish line.
Now, I will say, like, like I said before, like, I like that there we finally get a dark side user who was doing pretty dark things alive, and potentially we will see more of her story later, and, like, how does she make up for that, or does she?
Right, which is exciting.
Like, that is exciting.
I'm pumped for that opportunity. We've been talking about that on and off, like, even back, like, when we were talking about Rise of Skywalker, kind of what we hope to see for Kylo.
And maybe this kind of transitions us into a different area, but, like, I think, and maybe this is a controversial take, I think this should be only one season of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not because I didn't enjoy it or anything. It was because I did enjoy it.
Yes.
I don't want another one.
Right. This was great. Keep it here. This
is good. Yeah. 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 Exactly. Like,
we
I'm
landed.
Satisfied
Let's
with
not
that.
Take off again.
Yeah. But, like we talked about, they could continue a lot of the threads and storylines in a very similar show, like The Path or a Cal Kestis show, something like that.
Yeah. I'm excited that, like, we only see the beginning of Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan's journey kind of post-death. Like, I do wish that had been woven into the show more, just because I think that would have been an interesting way to have a window into what Obi-Wan's thinking internally more. But now we get that whole story elsewhere, you know? And I get why you don't want to get into this, like, metaphysical force stuff in a TV show. It's a lot of times can work better in a novel or a comic book or something like that, you know? But I am really looking forward to getting that story eventually.
Yeah. And I loved, honestly, like, to me, the way that the episode ended, it filled me with hope of, like, Obi-Wan is finally ready to learn that now. And he's ready to become the next phase of Jedi Master that the past 10 years have been holding him back. His guilt has been holding him back. But now he's rediscovered hope. and now he's ready and Qui-Gon's ready to teach him. I love that. And like leaving us there feels right. Yeah. Of like, that feels right. We know Qui-Gon will teach him how to do that. I don't need to see it. And I'm good with that. Now, if we end up getting it, like, I'm going to give it a chance for sure. But I kind of like where we ended the series. And yeah. I think it was a good jumping off point. Like, one last adventure before A New Hope, and this was it.
Right.
So that was really, really cool. In total, I think I would give this episode a 9.8 out of 10.
Okay. I'd probably give it, like, an 8. For me, I really enjoyed it. Really, really liked it. A few things I would have changed up about it. And it's not even like anything that's in the show. So it's not really the show's fault. It's just like there were some things I wanted more of, which is sure. why, you know, just because I wanted them.
Yeah.
Not because they would have necessarily made the story better. But
yeah.
So that's the only reason I'm going down to 8. But I thought it was super satisfying finale. Yeah, I'm excited to do a full watch through, see if any of those things that I felt like I was missing are more evident in a consecutive watch.
I might try to do that before our final Hello There Hotline episode.
I can guarantee you I do not have time to do that before that episode. But
so, yeah, and make sure you guys call in. We want that to be like kind of a series finale wrap up episode. So if you don't have any theories of like where it could go or what could happen, I do want to hear a lot of people's takes on what happens to Reva. That is like the largest thread still open.
Yeah.
You know, so like, I would love to hear everyone's take on that, but also just like, what were some things that you loved about Obi-Wan? And then like Max said, what were some criticism that you had? As well, if you had any. So we would love to hear that, and it's going to be a fun breakdown of the series in totality. So make sure you call in to the Hello There Hotline, 205-259-6675, and maybe your voicemail will get on there. You can call in, tell us your name, where you're from, keep it under 3 minutes, and if you mess up, just hang up and try again.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we do hope to hear from you then. We'll be back, like Alex said, very shortly. But until then, keep the watch.